Texas Absolute Rally, powered by the Kielder Works team. Cordless tools tailored for the world of motorsport.
Hi everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally, episode 10, season 13. We got there in the end, all with the help of Kielder, of course. Those who thought, where's the podcast this week? Maybe he's running a little bit late. Microsoft did inadvertently shaft me yesterday, and we thought we weren't going to have a podcast. But with lots of late night emails and speaking to people and putting software packages together, we managed to put a podcast together, one of which I'm actually really happy. It's the last podcast of this particular season. All the reprobates are at the top of the podcast. Then we've got Martin Holmes, and then we've got Ian Campbell, of course, who is the clock of the course for Wales Rally GB. Talks to us about the new route, and also talks to us about the British Rally Championship and moving forward, what they could be doing there. And we also debate our five cars, because what else is there to do in life? But there you go. Anyway, final episode, get everybody back. Why not? It's what could possibly go wrong. It's tantamount to Elvin Evans servicing his own car. That's what it feels like for me today. Anyway, right, on my right, I will say hello, Jack Bengen.
Hello, Tony Simpson. I'm fired up for this podcast. I'm very excited today.
Good lad. In the middle, we'll say hello, Ryan Champion.
Hello, I thought I'd been in the middle for a while, so nice to be in the middle.
There you go. I'm sure Trev on the left will give you a special cuddle, won't you, Trev?
Yeah, definitely, all the time. Hello, all of you. Right. And everybody listening.
There you go. Boys, before we go any further, we're going to do predictions. Last week, right, let's go straight to it. Right, no lube, going straight in. Right, Ogier, Jack Bengen, Ryan Champion, Trevor Agnew.
Whoops.
Yeah.
He was looking good. He was still looking good.
Hayden Padden, Tony Simpson. Okay, he didn't win, but he got on a podium. So there you go. I'm not going to make a big deal out of it, boys.
I never looked like winning.
Yeah, but at that point, did he need to?
I think I said I had him on the podium as well.
Yeah, but I
did 1-2-3.
Trevor, you always edge your bets. You are one of these people who does an each way. When they go the races, don't muck about. None of this winners. We'll just do an each way. Just cover ourselves. At least we cover the bet. Isn't that right, Trev?
It's a co-driver thing.
Yeah, okay. There you go. Anyway, boys, we've talked about Rally Turkey throughout the podcast, but obviously it's the first time we've all been together. Did it fail, or did it deem to be a success? Ryan Champion.
It was great, wasn't it? Great excitement. It's as we said last week. It was a tough round.
We've got no idea what we said last week because your phone cut out, Ryan Champion.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So
I was saying that it promised to be a rally where it was going to be unpredictable. We didn't know what was about to happen, and that's exactly the way it panned out. And I think it's great to have a bit of unpredictability in the WRC. It's great to see a new rally where people didn't know what was going to happen, and it certainly provided a proper test, didn't it?
I think that's an understatement. We'll talk about the junior section a little bit later on, because we want to do the headliners and then WRC2 and everything else. But Jack, I'm sure you were watching on WRC Live or WRC Plus. I seen some pictures that you tweeted with your laptop out and everything else. Not normally.
I killed a mug.
You killed a mug, obviously, goes without saying. Yeah. Did Turkey live up to what you thought it would be? Was it, you know, did it give everything we wanted it to be? Because it was a very different gravel rally, wasn't it? It wasn't like all the other gravel rallies. It has gave us something very, very different.
Well, before we start, we have to say that we don't want anyone to throw their phones out the window, because Stephen at Evo ETR said, have to say, if in the next podcast you guys go on about how great Rally Turkey was, I'll just throw my phone out of the car window. So sorry about this, Stephen, but you're going to have to throw your phone out the window.
Yeah, can we get somebody to take a picture of it, please, as well, and tweet us?
I'm really sorry, Stephen. No, yeah. I thought the event was brilliant, Tony. We go on about the safari, don't we, and all those kind of events, and how they can provide a great test and how they offer something completely different to rallying. And that's what Turkey did. You know, it gave us something completely different that we don't have anywhere else on the calendar. And whenever you do something like that and use attrition to shake up the order, it always makes things exciting. And, you know, you might argue that the fastest person didn't win over that weekend, you know, or it was ninth on Friday. And, you know, you, if it was just a normal kind of sprint WRC event, then, you know, chances are he wouldn't have had the pace that weekend to win the event. It would have been most probably Thierry Neuville or Sebastian Ogier. So it offered something really different, really exciting, even the playing field, because most of the drivers hadn't done any of those stages before. And yeah, just a really refreshing event.
Trev, was it driver error, or was it our 2017 cars not quite going up on rough events like that gave us, you know, and a finish at the end where you've got, you know, Henning Solberg, Jan Kopecky, you know, you've got R5 cars in the top 10.
Yeah, I suppose you could have possibly predicted that, because, you know, R5 cars have had a multitude of events throughout the world and they've been tested in those sort of conditions elsewhere. The drama certainly didn't happen on the first day. We all expected that first 38-kilometre stage to be one that could potentially end up with like minute gaps between maybe the top 10, but it didn't work out that way. And the Saturday, of course, the car started to break left, right and centre. What was interesting, I think, in Motorsport News this week, the teams are saying, okay, they liked it, it was good, they're embracing it, and they're talking about building stronger cars. They're all for it, what I can see.
No, you know, and again, I tell you what, but I don't know if you know, there was a stat that came out, it does get mentioned a little bit later on in the podcast, but obviously you have not heard that yet. Statistically, Turkey was the slowest event for 9 years. There you go.
Probably hard to surprise. I'd imagine Cyprus would have been the slower one.
Though. Yeah, no, 2009, Cyprus was the previous slowest event, and it actually took that title away. Now, Trev, I'll come to you. I've been speaking to some of the juniors. The juniors, by the way, that I've spoke to, absolutely loved it, and they see the value in doing the event. You were somebody that wanted more of a sprint event style for the juniors, but as I said, I've spoke to a couple of them, and they quite like the idea of pitting themselves and dealing with different situations perhaps that they've not dealt with before.
Yeah, fair play to them, you know, but I don't know how M Sport
I think M Sport have probably done well out of it, Trev. To be fair, I don't think anybody was sweating with when the order forms were coming in for parts. Let's put it that way. I think everybody was more than happy. I think we might have lost Trev.
Cars and plenty of them super rallying.
Trev, unfortunately, I think we're losing you.
Okay.
So yeah, we didn't get any of that at all. But we were just talking, obviously, about the junior cars and everything else. I don't know what your signal's like there, my friend, but this might not work on Skype. No. Anyway, we'll come back to.
I think he's done a Ken Torn there.
we'll come to Ryan Champion. Right, as I say, the guys who I spoke to who did it, they welcomed the opportunity to pit themselves in something that was different, that they'd not experienced before with regards to, you know, tyre management and driving round situations and writing notes, not necessarily to just go flat out.
Yeah, and stuff that very much used to be part of the WRC, but it's a lost art now, isn't it? With the sprint events and all flat out from the word go, regardless really of whether you're in a WRC car, an R5 car, or to a degree an R2 car. But we have seen over the last couple of years that, you know, certain events where they have had to look after the R2 cars on the rougher rally. Yeah, you know, and we saw that with the WRC cars as well this time. Was having to look after cars and having to you know, make sure that the car was there at the end. And I think it's a good thing to see. A WRC that's got to score up the world and all different
strategies. There you go, Jack. As you've got the best signal out of everybody,
that means I'm the most important. Then my views are the most important.
Clearly, you are going to be the most important, because I think we may well end up losing the other two the way things are going. But yeah, the you know, certainly from the guys that I spoke to that were out on the event in the little R2 Junior cars, as we're talking about those cars, you know. I think many of them now will possibly be, dare I say, very secondhand.
Yeah, definitely. I've gone the other way, Tony. To be honest, I've decided in my mind that it's a bad idea that they're doing Turkey.
Okay.
I think it should be in WRC 2, And that's where anyone who's sort of aiming for the WRC should be doing it. But for these guys who, you know, for a lot of the reasons Trev said last week, you know, these guys are, you know, quite often doing things on a budget. They're trying to make a name for themselves. And, you know, a lot of them who were very quick over the weekend didn't come through because they had too many problems. So, you know, there's some rocks the size of footballs. I saw some pictures of them on the event. And for me, it was just a bit too, you know, it was a bit too rough for the R2s. And although the cars obviously withstood a lot of what was thrown at them in Turkey, I think it'd be better placed on a WRC 2 calendar where they can learn about it then, rather than, you know, I appreciate what you learn from a rough event like that, and I'm not ruling that part out. I'm just saying, I think, you know, for these guys who are trying to prove themselves, it's better for you know, for it to be in JWRC.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm whispering Trevor Agnew as well. I agree with you.
I should have better service now.
Right, okay, there you go. Boys, I suppose the other thing there that we picked up on, of course, from the event, we have talked about the attrition that we knew was coming. But, you know, I think certain drivers were also quite quick to point out throughout the event as well that there was some smooth sections, right? You know, there was sections where, you know, it wasn't a case of footballs. There was a lot of regrading, apparently, that went out before the event to try and appease the teams to make the stages more manageable.
Yeah, well, like any of these events, it's always a mix. And even in the Acropolis days, when the Acropolis was known as a car breaker, there were sections of the Acropolis rally that were incredibly smooth and flowing and really nice sections. So, yeah, you haven't got car breaking rocks for every kilometre of every stage. And that therein lies the challenge. You know, it's having had a bit of experience in Africa, same thing. You get some fantastic flowing sections, but you have to manage the speed when you get to those rougher sections. And like I said, therein is the challenge, rather than just going flat out all the way through.
Trev, we spoke last week, I think, and we spoke every week about this, but we all kind of agreed last week that this event was perhaps going to be the event where we started to perhaps see, you know, maybe deciding factors for drivers almost prior to the domino effect that's going to happen when Sébastien Ogier finally does make his decision. And obviously, you know, we're hearing quite a lot now that Citroën is looking very likely, although I'm surprised because they're talking about a 3-year deal, which kind of goes against the grain of what we've heard that Sébastien Ogier wants to do. But are we anywhere clearer now? Are we seeing careers perhaps defined on that event?
I don't know at that event to define the careers as such, but and I think Ogier has said the next contract will be the last contract, not necessarily a year. But I think there's certainly going to be movement, which is quite exciting. And the talk of Chris Meek coming back in front page of Motorsport News again this week is fantastic. So, yeah, hopefully it'll be a bit of a shake-up. It always makes it more interesting when things get shook up. But the championship getting into the last three rounds is going to be incredible, especially GB. Traditionally, the weather, the person who's first on the road, in this case Thierry Neuville, should have an advantage. But Ogier is absolutely fantastic in GB. His record there, leading the rally, you know, up until last year, he was leading from 2011. Nobody beat him. Nobody was ahead of him in the rally. So, and that's going to be very, very exciting with Tannock just behind them all. So it's down to who's the strongest mentally, I think, going into the last three rounds. And as, you know, the reason that we picked Ogier for Turkey was, number one, M Sports cars usually reliable. A bit of a glitch on that rally, but in those situations, he's got the confidence because he's been there before.
Right, we are hearing different things with regards to, as I say, Trev's just talked about, obviously, you know, the strengths and weaknesses and things like that. We are hearing different things with regards to Sébastien Ogier supposedly going to Citroën with Esker Pekalapi and Chris Meek supposedly going to Toyota, which I just think, you know, it would be great. But I think even you said last week, you couldn't perhaps see a way back for Chris. And we surprised, and we spoke about the glass ceiling effect of, you know, WRC2. Are we surprised that Toyota are looking towards perhaps a 40-year-old driver still? Or is it still the fact that he's one of the fastest men potentially in the WRC?
Yeah, I think he's feels he can offer something towards Chris Meek that he hasn't had, and I think, you know, Chris talked about this in the past, and for Chris, his success he's had when things have been going really well has obviously been well documented, but when things haven't been going so well, has he had that support in the team? Now, Tommy's been through that. Tommy's done that. And obviously, we talked to Derek last week about similar things, but maybe Tommy thinks he can help Chris Meek get the best out of himself. And I'm not sure at Citroën he always had the best support around him. Yes, they gave him the best car they could, but I'm not sure the infrastructure was there to help him as a person. So, yeah, I think if it happens, and I still say it because, you know, I'd love to see it happen as much as anybody, but I wouldn't count on it just yet. But I think if it happens, that's because Tommy Raikkonen thinks he can manage Chris Meek and get the best out of him. At the same time, I'm surprised that Lappy is looking to championship maybe the team around him and sees Ogier only been there short term, but still, you know, Lappy is with fish legend team. Tanak obviously got
right. I'm gonna have to stop you. We are losing you. We are losing you now. You're cutting out. Jack Benyon, if I can come to you, obviously it's your front page. Chris supposedly to Toyota, but you know, we're hearing so many things. I think we tweeted something out the other day with regards to you know, how many seats is this Toyota going to have? Because there's quite a few drivers potentially going to be going there.
Yeah, well, you'd think they'd be kind of top of the pecking order at the minute, wouldn't they? The momentum they've got from mid-season, you'd think all the drivers would want to be in a Toyota next year, looking at how it's gone for the second half of the year. And, you know, obviously Hyundai have been strong as well, but from a momentum point of view, Toyota look really strong. And Lappi's an interesting one, isn't he? I feel like there's been something not quite right there this year. I don't know if you guys would agree with that, but it just doesn't seem to be the same kind of happy and sort of tongue-in-cheek kind of you know, fun thing that we're kind of used to in the last few years. And he's not delivered the performances this year that he did last year, really, and he should be picking things up a little bit now. And obviously he's new to some of the rallies still, but yeah, we've just not seen that kind of turn from him. And I don't know if he's just not happy in the team, is there something about the car that he doesn't like, or he's not comfortable, but it's definitely felt to me, I don't know, it may just be me, but it definitely feels like Ezepek has not been himself this year whenever I've seen him.
I can kind of see where you're coming from. I'll come to Trev in a second, yeah. But just picking up on that, it's maybe he's had his head turned. You know, you hear this in other sports, you know, using football as an analogy as well. You know, as he had his head turned, as you know, somebody said something, you know, well, you know, you're a junior driver there, but you know, you could come in as on number two or whatever it may be. Trev, do you think things like that happen, especially to the younger drivers, where they have their head turned and, you know, perhaps they're looking to the future and maybe the, you know, thinking the grass is greener?
Yeah, you don't know what happens behind closed doors. You know, it could be a financial consideration as well. He's got management team, and even management, they're not stupid. But, you know, as I said, you know, his targets this year might be completely different or unrealistic, or maybe they're too conservative for him. You know, he's always been extremely competitive. He wants to win every stage, wants to win every leg of every rally, and that's been his downfall from time to time. And certainly this year, when it hasn't been going well, we've seen, you know, a very negative EP. But I'm really surprised. Twofold. One is that Citroën are going to take him as a second driver, potentially, if Ogier does go there. And second, that he would want to go to Citroën from a car that is definitely sorted to one that's be fair, isn't sorted, really.
I guess, I suppose the domino effect is, boys, and I'll try you again, Rye, is that maybe, you know, the dream team for him would be to go and work with Ogier for a couple of years and then become the number one. That's sometimes these carrots that are dangled, aren't they?
Yeah, maybe that's the way he's looking at it. Maybe he wants to learn from the best and work alongside Ogier. But as Trev's just said, it I mean, maybe there is something in what Jack said also, because there's something that doesn't quite add up there. Why would you leave a well-funded, top-performing team to go to an underperformer? Because it's not like he's going to be the clear number one there if Ogier goes there. So I think, Jack might be right. There's something that doesn't quite add up at the minute.
I just wonder whether it is a head turning moment. But if we can, you know, as we always say, we always assume our listeners know the results and everything else. And Just a couple of drivers I just want to mention, and you know, he's had a bit of a tough time, you know, and we probably gave him a tough time as well, but just poor Andreas Mikkelsen at the moment, Jack, just couldn't buy a look, could he? You know, with all the money in the world, he just couldn't buy a better look.
No, not at all. And he has been really unlucky this season. And it's one of them situations where it's a chicken and the egg situation, isn't it? You're having bad luck, and then you're maybe not motivated in the correct way, or you know you're kind of worrying about what's going to happen to you next on the event, and it all kind of goes around in a big circle, doesn't it? And you know, just literally taking the lead of the rally, and then reduced to a Mark II Escort spec I-20. So not ideal for him. Obviously, again, to have another bad rally. But I think he's a strong character. We saw him drive off at the stage end, didn't we, and not say anything after the problems, and he was clearly very angry about what was going on. But from everything I've seen from him before, he seems to be pretty bulletproof mentally, and I think he'll bounce back.
Trev, we've talked about this perhaps before as well with Jari Matti. Can some of this bad luck be down to could it be down to driving style as well? You know, is it maybe, you know, his teammates drive the car in a certain way, maybe his driving style? And I'm not saying it's flamboyant or anything like that. Quite the opposite. I don't know. I suppose it's just trying to understand sometimes that, yeah, you can attribute so much to bad luck, but, you know, does it come down to sometime how the machinery is used, I guess?
Yeah, I don't know is the honest answer, but there's certainly more drivers seemed to have bad luck than ever before. I remember Andreas, even in the Volkswagen on Rally GB, must be about two, maybe even 3 years ago, where he came out of Havering and in two-wheel drive, he ran for most of Friday afternoon in rear-wheel drive as well. But, you know, they're like a great brain. You know, what is he to do? The bad luck that he has had on Fridays in particular has been just horrendous, and losing that car, as we know, is the worst thing that can happen.
Yeah, I was, you just feel for Craig whenever, you know, Craig never fails to show emotion, does he? You know, good, bad or indifferent. He always gives you, you know, he doesn't hide his emotions very well, does he? Right. You know, it is heart on sleeve, which is why we all love Craig. And we seen the first stage time going on the Friday, and I was so, so pleased for him. But I was also a bit worried about tyre wear because, you know, I just wonder whether the guys on the 38Ks were thinking long term, you know, are we protecting tyres here? And whether Craig's had a push and, you know, further into the rally, I think stage 3-4, you know, he was starting to have issues with tyres, whereas others were starting to claw time back.
Yeah, but it was certainly nice to see him, you know, put in a strong time and be up there again. And as we've just been talking about bad luck, I mean, but Craig just he needs a result. He wants a result, but it's not for a lack of pace. That's the good thing. And yeah, he does show his emotion, but that's great, isn't it? We want to see characters in sport. We want to see feelings. We don't want to see people not giving interviews, or we don't want to see people just giving the blank face or whatever it might be. So and again, we're talking about a shake-up position. Where's that going to leave Craig Breen as well? That's another big question unanswered. So let's hope that he can put this bad luck behind him, keep that speed going, and get a couple of results towards the end of the season to ensure that he's in a good position for next year.
I couldn't agree more. I think we've just got to give massive credit to the guys in the R5s. Obviously, Chris Ingram, friend of the show, he's been on many times. Just a couple of words, Trev, on his performance.
Yeah, fantastic. He stayed out of trouble on Friday, right up until the last stage, I think it was. But yeah, first attempt at R5 and WRC2 was a great performance. And he was putting it up to the best of them. So, but really strange as well. You saw both Skodas have double punctures. I don't remember that happening before. Double punctures, changing double punctures, and both of them did the same thing.
Yeah, would something like that, right, come down to setup, you know, damper settings or whatever, to have both share exactly the same, as Trev just said, double puncture, you know, I think, was it the same stage as well, or was it the stage after? I can't remember.
Just the same stage.
Same stage, yeah. You know, is that come down to setup, right?
No, I don't. I think it's just pure coincidence, just pure bad luck that both cars had a double puncture, maybe in the same place. But no, I think just coincidence, that one.
And so, Capecchi changed his in 3 minutes, didn't he? Two wheels and tyres in 3 minutes. Incredible.
Good effort.
Could come from
my neck of the woods to be able to do that, in fairness to him. Just before Ryan Champion said it.
You wouldn't be changing him, though.
Yeah, I nudge the floodgates in here. They are wide open. Ryan Champion comes in, kicks them in. There you go. Happy days. Happy days. Again, we talk about him briefly a bit later in the podcast, but how good was it to have Henning Solberg back, by the way, boys?
Yeah, mega.
I just love Henning Solberg. Do you know what? Right, and I mean this with the greatest respect. And, we've moved on massively. You know, the drivers are all athletes now. You know, the lean and everything else. Whereas, it's fair to say, I think Kenning likes the Greggs. I think that's fair to say. But it doesn't, you know, I'm sure he still has his own regime of some sort. But it doesn't matter. He still pedals. And, you know, he's still massively, you know, when we talk about, you know, results and stuff like that, I think that's a monumental result in an R5 car for somebody that is not driving cars all the time. Thanks, boys. Thanks for the support.
No, it is absolutely. He did a great job. He kept out of trouble, and that's what we said. That's what this rally was about. It was about keeping out of trouble, getting your car to the end of the rally, having minimised any time loss, and that's exactly what he did. Putting all his years of experience into practice.
Great. And oversaw the repair of Ogier's car as well as Elvin. So
he did.
I was just going to come to that. He was, you know, just a great effort. And then of course, it's been spoken about many times now. Elvin effectively servicing his own car as well, which, you know, I think, again, that just shows the level that we all know the lads go in and, you know, they all have time in the workshop to learn how to do things. But, you know, straight away, boys on the spanners getting the job done. Dan's doing mud flaps. Yeah, it's not all glamour, is it? It's not all glamour in the WRC. But there you go. There you go. Boys, believe it or not, we're now 25 minutes in. So, in view of the fact we're not going to have an extra long podcast, this podcast we're not going to do 2 hours. We're not doing 2 hours. We're going to do a little bit of admin before we go any further. Gary Boyd sent in some facts, boys. We know we like these, but stretching back to 2009, Oytanak won Rally Turkey in 2018 with an average speed of 78.3 kph. To find a lower winning average, you need to look back to Cyprus. There you go. In March 2009, won by Sebastian Loeb, which was 68.6 kilometres an hour. You also need to go back to 2009 to find the last time a driver not named Seb won three consecutive rallies. In 2009, Mika Hirvonen won Acropolis, Finland and Poland. That's a great quiz question, that last point, isn't it?
That is.
I should have saved that one as a bit of a question, really, shouldn't I? There you go. Little bit of admin. The story just broke just before we started doing this. It's been mentioned, but Petter is back on Spain in an R5 Polo, boys.
Oh, yep. That's good news.
Yeah. So there you go. So
who's co-driving?
No idea.
I've already seen Petter drive an R5 Polo.
I know you have. There's always one, isn't there? It's always Ryan Champion. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So there you go. So we need to go to any other business, boys. We'll go to Ryan Champion first.
Well, mine would be a mention of this weekend's events, which is Rally Day at Castle Coombe this weekend, the biggest rally show in the UK. So a fantastic lineup of cars there. It's featuring this year the 60th anniversary of the British Rally Championship. So a couple of iconic cars from the British Championship history, the likes of Richard Burns's British Championship winning legacy, one of Jim McRae's British Championship winning Opel Scorners. There's a Vatten and Escort going to be there on the BRC stand. So some great cars along with the likes of British Championship legends, Jim McRae, Russell Brooks, Terry Cabe is going to be there as well. And also Mickey Biation making an appearance at Rally Day this weekend.
It's a good job you mentioned all that, because Ian Campbell doesn't mention any of that at the end of the podcast. Doesn't mention any of it at all. So it's a good job you mentioned that.
He'll be stood on his little stand with all these cars around him and he's never mentioned it.
I know. Right. Just one thing, just as an aside. Did you watch the WRC coverage where, I've got to be very careful here, but it was the president of Turkey got interviewed?
Oh, no, I haven't seen that.
Haven't you seen it? His interpreter has possibly had the best moustache in WRC since Terry Cabe was knocking around in WRC. look out for it. Honestly, it is legit. I'm convinced it's got its own passport. Trevor Agnew, you're any other business?
My any other business. I was very excited to see Oliver Solberg getting tuition from Sebastian Loeb and Petter Solberg in his R2 car this week. What two great shooters to have. It also got me thinking, a couple of weeks ago we talked about brothers. Of course, we've got Henning and Petter Solberg. What about families in rallying? You start off clearly with the champion family, where there's a son, and there's a mum and dad, and there's a granddad who rallied, I think, as well. But
And a wife, of course.
Yeah, yeah. And Finley's got his own rally car now as well, so there's loads there. But I think the Solbergs, if you start to think through Pernilla and her dad, Per Inge Walfredsson, and then you've got Oliver, you've got Petter, you've got Henning, you've got Oscar. So there's quite a lot in that family. I wonder which family have got the biggest. The Moffats in Ireland, you've got the two boys at the minute, Sam and Josh, but also their uncles. You've got Morris and Robert. Who's got the biggest family of rally people that have competed, I wonder?
I think the Solberg should be, this should be a documentary. I think I might have said this on the podcast before. The way we had the Flying the World documentary with Ozzy Osbourne. And I think there should be one. Henning Solberg should be followed round. And I just think it'd be gold. I think it'd be gold. Netflix, you're missing an opportunity. I'll direct it. We'll get involved. Trev will bring the funding. It'll be fine. Jack Bennion, you're in the business.
Yeah, Veronica Engen is co-driving for Petter, Trevor, just, you know.
I thought that might be the case.
Yeah, that's true. And my only business is congratulations to Alexei Lukyanuk, who's finally managed to win the European Rally Championship through the fact that Bruno Magalhães has not entered this weekend's Rally Poland. So congrats to Alexei. He's changed his style this year and not crashed as much. And it's clearly delivered strong results for him. And he's had a difficult few years, especially when he had the testing crash last year, where he was extremely badly injured and was really struggling to actually push the pedals on the car and actually cope with the physical nature of the R5. So a very difficult year for him. And not to forget that, you know, someone lost their life in a car he was co-driving, as well as his injuries. And he's come back with a bit of a new attitude, sort of looked at how he rallies, his technique, and really looked to improve that through this year and managed to win the title. So big well done to Alexei, and I think it's well deserved.
And props to Bruno Magalhães as well for his tribute to him and the way he praised his driving through the year. I thought that was very, very supporting and brilliant to see.
Definitely.
Yeah, no, good words. Right, my any other business, there's a few, but it's all kind of general admin really for the podcast, as we're having a bit of a break now. But I get emailed in questions for you guys, and I've been saving them up. We're not going to do them now, but I just wanted to let the people know who send them in. It's Auntie L, which not my auntie, but Auntie L on Twitter, who's been sending them in, and some of them are tough, some of them are really tough, I have to say.
Who gets asked the most questions?
Antila?
Antitil.
It's probably Antila, I think.
Okay, well, there you go.
Instead of your Auntie L.
No, I didn't say my Auntie L. Anyway, listen, we're running out of time, boys, stop dicking about. Right, right, so thank you for sending those in. I just wanted to thank the guys that have left some nice comments on iTunes and also on Podbean. It does make a difference, all these stuff we do share with Kielder and stuff like that, and that's what they need, and they need to see that as well. And we do appreciate the sharing round of the Kielder stuff. We've got a meeting on Wales Rally GB for some new competition stuff that we're going to be doing with Dan and with Kielder as well. But it's lovely. Thanks for the nice comments. We do try really, really hard to bring you something different every week and not the same old tripe. Although that said, speaking of the same old tripe, this is the bit where we let these three go and then we cross over and talk to our guests this week. So, Ryan Champion, enjoy the rest of your time down in Walter's Arena.
Thank you. It's raining, it's pouring.
It's the old man snoring.
It's Rally GB weather in the forest, actually.
Now, there you go. So that's a proper rally stuff. Jack Bennion, what are you doing with your 2 weeks off?
That's a good question. I'm having a rest this weekend. I'm not doing too much. And then the weekend after, I'll be working on the Autosport website again like I was this weekend. So some things to look forward to.
Trevor Agnew, will you be playing golf?
Might have another game. Big Dave will want to beat me next time out. But it means I have to go and buy the beers in about 20 minutes, so...
There you go. Well, listen, you enjoy your 2 weeks off. And folks, we do appreciate the download. As I say, we will be back after this break with Martin Holmes. And then at the end of the podcast, we have got Ian Campbell, who I mentioned at the top of the podcast, of talking all about Wales Rally GB, what's going on this weekend at Rally Day, and the future of the British Rally Championship as well. So stay tuned.
This is Absolute Rally, powered by the Kielder Works team. Cordless tools tailored for the world of motorsport. Developed from hands-on knowledge that you only get in the service park, not the boardroom. The range of Kielder cordless impact wrenches are designed to be compact, lightweight, feel good, and crucially, get the job done. Kits are available for less than £160. Plus, exclusively for Absolute Rally listeners, use discount code RALLY for 10% off at www.kielder.co. Simply search Kielder Tools online.
Welcome back to the final section of Absolute Rally, the final section, of course, of our final episode of this season. And as ever, every season, we like to get the esteemed voice of rallying for many, many years, Martin Holmes, on Absolute Rally. So welcome back to Absolute Rally, Martin.
I'm a little bit worried about you saying it's the final thing. I don't think this season has really seen its best yet.
I always talk about our season. This is our season of podcast. You see, we have a 2 week break, so I'm not talking about the rally season, Martin. We have a 2 week break and then we come back and we do banks of 10. So it is our season. I'm sorry about that. I didn't mean to trouble you there. But
a lot of things that are going on at the moment. I mean, excessively troubled by the confusion in the media, the silly season. I'm just hoping that within a few weeks that'll end with the confirmation of a calendar for next year, the confirmation of who tries which. But I mean, if anybody wants to follow the sport, learn more to do the sport seriously, they've had a very bad time trying to make any sense out of the sport in the last few months.
I think from the political side, you're probably right. You know, with the calendar, you know, obviously, from putting my other hat on, I work with teams and stuff and privateers mostly these days. And, you know, it's been very, very difficult for privateer teams to even start thinking about the implementation of where Chile will fit into the calendar, for instance. And, you know, that event being tagged onto Argentina and Mexico, of course, because of the region, and that effectively would be long haul event for containers going from event to event to event and then back to Europe or perhaps even onwards to Japan and in store. But, you know, the FIA calendar, hasn't helped privateer teams. I don't even think it's helped the works teams, because I'm sure the works teams will still be, they're still obviously trying to get budgets approved by, you know, respective manufacturers or major sponsors at this point.
Well, I'm just hoping that sense will ultimately prevail at the World Motorsport Council. I think it probably will, not only because they've got their reputation to maintain and be respected, but also the fact that, in the end, the FIA are the people who make the decisions and not the that tend to be led to think is the case.
With regards to, you know, the new events that are talking about coming, of course, we've just, you know, we're going to talk about Turkey, of course, in a second. We've got an event that was dropped coming up this weekend, which is being picked up by the ERC, obviously, Rally Poland. Obviously, it was dropped on safety concerns. Turkey was its replacement. Your opinion, did WRC choose right in taking Turkey over Poland?
In the circumstances, and without fully knowing what was in the background, it looks as if it was the right decision. Poland, of course, is one of the absolute basic grassroots of motorsport rallying, and to have them thrown away for an event which comes some years and then goes away other years, it's a little bit unsettling, particularly if you want to enjoy some stability in the sport.
I guess ERC picking up keeps it fresh, and I guess probably most fans' minds in Poland. It doesn't matter. There's still an event going on. Obviously, the big teams are there, but there's certainly, you know, a fair amount of European teams. Unfortunately, the championship, of course, is already been confirmed by one of the main protagonists, unfortunately declaring that they've run out of budget.
I don't actually think it has been settled. It will be settled at the weekend if Lekianek is able to secure the points which makes him unbeatable, but at the moment he's not unbeatable. But what is interesting is we speak about Poland and the Rajd Polski there early. It's the event which is the European Championship is going to include in the series this year is the rally up in Mikkelwajki, but they are rejecting the previous event, the tarmac event they had further south in the country. And the reason was not because Mikkelwajki was being wasted. It was more the fact that they wanted a gravel event rather than a tarmac event. So things have happened through a variety of different reasons.
Now, moving away from Poland, you know, obviously we've all spoke about Turkey for the last 3 or 4 days, obviously prior to the podcast being dropped and obviously the event finishing. Interestingly, before we started, you gave me a stat, which is a stat which I think there's certain aspects of probably people in at WRC level and maybe even the media and stuff like that. It's not a stat that they'd be proud of these days, but I nevertheless found it a really interesting stat.
Which
was, it was the slowest WRC round for...
Since 2009.
Yeah, which was Cyprus, I think it was. Yeah. Now,
and then before that, 2008, the rally in Poland, in Kemer, which is not so far away from the Marmaris area, was also an extremely slow event.
See, we spoke about this. Me and the boys spoke about it last week. We were talking about the juniors going to Rally Turkey, and I was massively conflicted on, you know, whether we should be sending juniors out there. And Trevor Agnew was quite passionate about the fact, well, you know, we should be doing the faster events, and that's where the decisions are made. I've spoke to some of the juniors after the weekend, and they've seen the aspect of thinking about their driving. Tire management was a big problem that many of the crews suffered, and you know, it was very, very easy to scrap tires on this particular event. What was your take on it, Martin? Do you think it's a place we should be sending juniors to perhaps judge them on other aspects other than driving fast?
That depends on who has to pay for the repairs in the car.
Well, that's a different conversation for a different day, I guess.
Nature of the roughness and the degradation of the stages became evident. The drivers are, oh yeah, sure. We like tough rallies. But they don't have to pay for the cars.
Yeah, I heard a statistic, and I'm not going to say where it came from, but somebody I know who was working on the event, and they told me Citroën's bill, part bill was, and this is aside from what unfortunately happened to Craig Breen's car, of course, was somewhere in the region like €500,000.
Well, you can't muck around in this sport, can you? Try to have a budget to go to win, or you don't.
Yeah, no, very true. But you know, you just think about a parts bill like that, and that's just it's just staggering, isn't it? It's just absolutely staggering. If we can talk about performances and results, we always take it for granted. Our listeners, of course, are very much up to speed with who's finished where and everything else. We got our predictions monumentally wrong last week. We dared to make some predictions. I actually predicted quite a good rally for Hayden Padden, and I'll take some credit in the fact that he did finish on the podium. But the boys were all adamant that it was going to be a Sebastian Ogier event, purely because the pressure he was under, I suppose, to pull more points back from Thierry. But I kind of went with the attitude that this is perhaps a pressure that Sebastian Ogier's not really been under before.
I wrote it's not published yet, but the next column for pace notes, suggesting the reason that Ogier went off the road is because he was thinking about Citroën, and should he go to Citroën, should he not go into Citroën, how things changed at the beginning of the rally when Breen was lying first and Mads was lying third. It was all going hunky-dory. Then, of course, we came the series of Citroën turbocharger failures, which I still don't know yet why that ever happened. And then all of a sudden, Breen's car catches fire, and maybe Sebastian was thinking, maybe Citroën's not such a good idea. And bang, he was stuck off the road. I wonder whether the two have any connections.
Do you think he's going to end up back there?
Well, I hope he stays in M Sport, because I can't see a better solution for M Sport. But still, we don't know.
Yeah, it's it seems to be a very convenient marriage, but I can't help but feel that you know, Sebastian is said. I found what was quite interesting that came out just before the rally. I think it was the head of Mr. Boudard or Monsieur Boudard was saying, you know, it potentially could be a 3-year deal. And that I found that's the bit where I kind of went, I'm not sure, because we know that Sebastian's trying.
He's saying that yeah. He doesn't want to have anything other than a final contract to stay in the sport. I mean, one of the things which is the most exhausting aspect of rally driving is the fact that there's so much uncertainty in relation to the future. Now, this is something that the fans really don't know. For them, it is fun to know whether where Sebastian is going to end up, but the stress in the drivers and the drivers' families, as drivers are tending to get older at the top level these days, is not to be denied. It's a major factor in the performance of drivers. And when Sebastian says he only wants one more contract, I can understand that. He doesn't want to go through the endless agony of when the family says, well, we're going to go there next year. We might not be going there next year. We might not. And this is not such a nice situation at all. Certainly a situation I think the average fan has no idea about.
Yeah, I guess the other thing as well, from Seb's point of view, and, you know, I know other drivers, you know, this is kind of a contradiction in terms, because we know Oit is obviously a family man, very much so, as is Sebastian Ogier. But, you know, there's definitely an element when we all have children, self-preservation, because we want to be around. And, you know, we start perhaps questioning things that we do to go, okay, well, you know, I want to be around to see, you know, my children further down the line and things like that. You just wonder whether some of the older drivers, like you've just mentioned, whether that's also part of the makeup of, you know, the decision making process.
Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think, you know, Thierry being confirmed for Hyundai, I think that's made very interesting aspect now towards Hyundai of whether they will run a third car, but whether they have a third full-time driver. I personally, and this is my personal interpretation, is that they will not go with the shared option next year, and whoever drives the third car will be a full-time third driver.
Don't know at all.
Well, I just think that they're kind of, to some degree, on the manufacturer's front, that's kind of been their undoing a little bit, because obviously Andreas, and you know, we'll talk about Andreas's events in a second, but Andreas is, you know, for various reasons, hasn't had the greatest season. Danny Sordo, when he's been called in, he's done, you know, a relatively good job, as has Hayden, obviously getting the podium that we just mentioned in Turkey. You know, but definitely the continuity of having that third driver throughout the season, perhaps with the aid of the manufacturer. It's all about the manufacturers, isn't it?
That sends us back to Citroën and the uncertainty of management of their policies and everything. And I'm wondering, does Ogier really know just how devastating has been the lack of direction, the lack of policy in Citroën? I mean, this whole business about the way that Citroën have mucked around with their drivers for some time now is amazing.
And I wonder whether that's what he's waiting for confirmation on from commitment from the manufacturer. You know, that was something that came out. You know, he was non-committal about which manufacturer it was, but there was definitely a statement with regards to, and I am paraphrasing it in fairness, but with regards to, you know, I'm waiting for, you know, certain assurances from the manufacturer.
I'm sure, yeah.
You know, I don't think I would have been. I don't know. I would have been really fascinated about Martin. What odds we would have got 3 events ago on Oit Tanak winning those 3 events and being second overall in the championship at this point?
Well, I have a feeling he's got the opportunity to do that, and all strength to everything, and particularly it's quite a. I mean, his performances have been quite a revelation so far as Toyota are concerned. We don't know yet. It's all part of them in the mix.
Well, that's what. I said something the other day on our Twitter feed with regards to. I think we are. You know, I don't remember a season like this. Probably in, you know, late 90s, maybe, where we had 3 drivers, 3 different manufacturers, all with a story to tell at the moment, all with a potential that they could all end up with a happy ending.
Yeah. What is very interesting, I think you probably know that Graham Robson and I am writing a book on the history of Rally GB. And every year we've been going through everything. And it's amazing how many times everything has been hanging in the balance right up to the end of the season. There's been very few times when it hasn't been that way at Rally GB or the RSC Rally. But it's been good fun watching them resurrecting photographs, traditional photographs of the likely champions shaking hands with each other in the press conference. It's been going on a long time at the Rally GB.
It's, yeah, and do you know what? It's very weird. I was speaking to somebody about this the other day. Physically getting, being told that Rally GB is in, 2 weeks' time or something, and the decision, the title fight isn't going to be decided there, which I think is a great shame. You know, from a very biased point of view, Rally GB should be in November. It should be cold. It should be wet. And our champion should be crowned there.
I think you're right.
But going back to Rally Turkey,
is what our country has learned to stand for in rallying.
I think it. You know, you speak to anybody around the world. We've got some people coming over from America who are very heavily involved in the American Championship, who I'm going to be with on GB. And you know, their question to me was, Tony, is it going to be cold? Is it going to be wet? And is it going to be dark? And I said, well, probably not quite what you're imagining from watching videos of yesteryear. It'll probably be dark, but we probably won't have, you know, what you've been watching growing up, you know, or you've been catching up on YouTube for over the years. It's probably not going to be quite like that. And as you say, that's what people expect Rally GB to be.
I think it's not going to be dark, is it?
No.
Only that funny little first stage is going to be dark, I think. I think that's the only dark stage in the rally.
I think it is. I think it is the one around the horse track and Towing. So, but, you know, that's another conversation for a different day. I think there's a dying art into it. It takes a lot of experience and a lot of work to get it right driving in the dark. And I think it's a challenge which we're sadly starting to lose in the sport now. But anyway, there you go. One thing I was so excited to see, and I think I'd like your interpretation. Henning Solberg, Rally Turkey, 6th overall. R5 car by long shot, and we'll talk about some of the other riders and runners in R5 shortly. But are we underestimated just how good Henning has been over the years for him to come in and do that?
It was lovely seeing him on the All Live program. I mean, every time, on a few occasions we saw him, he was grinning from ear to ear. I mean, it really was a lovely situation. But it was an impressive performance, I do agree.
I just think, you know, from an R5 point of view, because, you know, again, we keep talking about how rough the rally was, of course. And, you know, it did look, you know, to me and speaking to the people who were out on the event, you know, it was tantamount to an Acropolis of yesteryear, and probably a modern day safari would probably be slightly smoother than what they experienced on the event.
When we're talking about the roughness of Turkey, I think it's important to put it into perspective. One of the interviews, all live, was with Mads, and he was explaining that the really rocky bits where all the stones are being unearthed and causing the damage, in fact, was only in a limited number of areas where the organizers, hoping to make the crews happier, in fact, had done a lot of regrading, and the roads hadn't had a chance fully to bed in. I don't know how accurate that was, but it was quite an interesting take, because then when we came to Saturday and Sunday, there wasn't anything like the same new damage. Some of it may have been knocked on from weaknesses on the Friday, but certainly I think that it was unfortunate the way that things happened, especially for the organisers, who seem to have done everything they could to make people happy.
They certainly put a lot of effort into you know, we, obviously, that by all accounts, that, well, we've seen that the Turkish president was there. Apparently, the level of security in the service park has been nothing like anybody's seen before. There was snipers in the hills. There was people on security on top of High-End Eye and M Sports Hospitality and everything else. So they're trying to endear themselves, and obviously, having the president of the country. You used to imagine our president, our prime minister, rather, you know, rocking up in Deeside. I don't quite know how it would have pan out, but you know, the charm offensive, of course, to everybody to that the government are supporting, and I guess they are spending a lot of money to bring the event there and create something as well.
Certainly, it was a tremendous delight for the Turkish establishment that the rally happened and the rally went well.
I think so. Moving forward towards looking at the rest of, I guess, of the season and how things are going to unfold, Martin. How many drivers do you think are going to be where they are right now in 6 months' time?
I take a guess and say probably more than we are pontificating.
Right.
I don't know, though. I really don't know. It's going to be an interesting time in the next few weeks. Where all the pieces in the jigsaw fit.
I personally can't wait for the 12th of October, because I think, you know, I still think that will have a massive knock-on effect for the drivers. And I'll explain probably a little bit why, and you know, and I appreciate to some degree to yourself, I'm probably preaching to the choir on this one. But, Turkey was classed, in inverted commas, as a long-haul event. And the reason why it was classed as a long-haul event is because... Turkey was classed as a long haul event to some degree because it was a Carnet event, so it still needed managing logistically. Okay.
No, I don't think it was for that reason.
No, but it basically it needed somebody to manage the full move of all the equipment in under Carnet. That was fact. So it's been classed.
Yes.
Yeah. So in inverted commas, it's classed by the teams to some degree as under the banner of a long haul. Then we've got Mexico, Argentina, Chile, and of course Japan. So we've got two extra long haul events, or call it two and a half. Okay, we've got two extra long haul events. Somebody's got to find the budget for those additional long haul events, and then what's left is what's going to be left to pay the drivers. And I just think that there's such a knock on effect that's going to happen from the calendar to what drivers end up where, to what drivers bring budget, etc., dare I say. I think that is an underestimated part, and perhaps, as you said before, maybe not what a fan will understand, but certainly from the business side of it, most definitely the calendar, I think, will dictate more than what people realise of what drivers end up with.
At the moment, Turkey is not long haul. Long haul is when all the teams have their special equipment and take their special equipment a special recce cars themselves by boat from one event to another event. And that doesn't happen so far as Turkey is concerned. Well, certainly not this year. When you speak about Chile, I really don't know what the strength of that situation is. I can't believe that they will have Chile and Argentina. And I can't believe that they would want to dump Argentina. But you never know these days. I mean, there's so many new factors coming into play. Things like all the new national car rules, which allow strange vehicles to be in a world championship and bolster the number of competitors which would otherwise be allowed to compete. It's interesting looking at the entry list for Rally GB. 60 cars on the list, but only 49 of them are fully homologated, which is a bit strange. Now, I'm still, perhaps you can help me here, that Escort Mark II, what's that to do with the World Championship? I really don't know.
I fall under the banner of not liking Mark II Escorts anymore. And I'm not very popular for saying that, but I think there's more Mark II Escort rally cars now than there was ever actually rolled off the production line in Halewood. I don't quite know how it happens, but I'm just, I am not entirely comfortable with seeing cars like that as part of Rally GB at all.
Do you know Mr. Stephen Southall? Do you know his car? Is it a 2.5 litre car? Is it one that ever was homologated or won?
I have no idea, being honest with you. I have no idea. And this is nothing against the driver and everything else. You know, I understand, you know, the way the Swedish event runs, where they have the historic events on the back of it, of course, which Petter's done. We had Patrick Sandell on the other week. He's done it. And I think Henning's done it as well, if memory serves. I completely and utterly get that. And maybe that's something that should be promoted. And I understand the national event props up, you know, the WRC event, dare I say. But, yeah, but having a Mark II is part, I don't get it, and I don't think it lends itself, and I understand there's a story to be told behind it, but I think it's a well-trodden story now, I really do.
Yes.
I really do. But we got into an interesting debate talking about, you know, you've just mentioned there about homologated cars, and you know, my fear, we're moving more and more away from what we know today as homologated cars and the low end homologated cars, which of course we're limited now to the number of manufacturers. You know, way back when, you know, it wouldn't be out of sorts for, you know, Honda to homologate a Civic, or, you know, Skoda, of course, the old favorites, you know, was an M1 car. You know, even Volkswagen had the Polo M1 and things like that. You know, they were all cost-effective homologated cars for people to go and use. Of course, we've moved away from that, and there's certain manufacturers that don't feel they've got the budget to go R5 or indeed into WRC. Now, we've had a bit of an ongoing debate, and we've had some emails from John Williams as well, who's a guy who listens, who's involved with various things in rallying in this country and in Europe, about R4. What's your take on R4, Martin?
Well, it's intended to be a stopgap between R2 up to R5, bearing in mind that R3 is dead in the water.
Yeah.
It's a question of whether R4 cars can fit into the performance gap which has been caused between R2 and R5. If it does, then obviously there's something going for it. If not, I don't think there is.
Yeah, basically, I'll read out John's message, because as I say, John's heavily involved in rally, and he works with people like Neil Simpson and people like that. And I'd kind of made the reference to the R4 category that, of course, they tried to bring in to beef up Group N cars, I think, towards the end of the IRC era. where they basically allowed, you know, more damper travel and take weight out and glass and things like that. Obviously, I'd made that kind of comparison. I'll just read John's message. I think you need to forget any parallels between the previous incarnation R4 and the current one. It's totally irrelevant. The name remains the same, but there's nothing else. I believe they should have changed the name, but understand the naming convention wouldn't really allow. Other than the UK and Ireland, I think most mainland European national championships have a degree of manufacturer importer presence. I'm struggling to think of one that doesn't. That said, possibly my example was not the best. Perhaps if I said that Honda Europe or Nissan Europe wanted to enter ERC, that would be a much better. Even more exciting, as I understand, that WRC entry for R4 cars is to be allowed for homologated from 2019 onwards. I think the FIA should be knocking on doors of the world's manufacturers, offering them relatively low-cost access to the sport's biggest stage, the WRC, via this formula. If they aren't, then this is a failure of this formula. It will be entirely down to them.
Yep.
Yeah. So,
you were talking about Chile and Turkey and everything a few minutes ago.
I think I know where you're going.
I was going to ask you, what do you think about Japan and Safari?
Japan, I get, and I think the drive behind Japan is probably it's understandable, Mr. Toyota, and obviously the Toyota World Rally Team, and you know everything else. You know, the passion over there apparently is huge. To have the WRC back there. Chile, I don't know. I don't know enough about the country. I don't know enough about the rally in there. I don't know whether, I think it's Chile where they run, I seem to remember, was it Federico? Who was the guy with the privateer, the Munchies team? Federico Ram Focuses, run by M Sport. Federico Viagra, was it, or something like that?
Yeah.
He was. He's Chilean. Have I got that right?
No. He's Argentine.
Is he right? Okay. I don't know whether I'm getting mixed up. But do they run the Maxi formula out in Chile? Is that because I know Maxi cars were big in? I think they were big.
Argentina.
No.
Is it
right? Okay. Well, I'm. See, that's how much I know about Chilean rallying, and that's how much I can't really name any drivers that spring to mind that have come out of that particular country. So the only...
Well, got people like Heller. Pedro Heller driving the R5 at the moment in the British in the World Championship. I mean, he's a Chilean.
Yeah. But, you know, outside, it's got to be a financial thing, surely.
Well, I think it's Argentina or Chile. What do you want? Do you want the long-established, well-respected event? Or do you want to have something new for the sake of it and blow the classic events in the past? That's, for me, the issue.
I think that's across the board, though, isn't it? I think that's not just that. So, you know, you've just mentioned, of course, Safari. You know,
it is across the board, but it's a special case of two countries adjacent to each other.
Yeah. So, put my other hat on, logistically, it's a dream. Dead easy. And to tick two boxes for two different countries.
Having both.
Yeah.
So in relation to the quest of the FIA or the promoter to find rallies in new territories, we have two in the same territory.
Yeah.
So that doesn't stack up.
Well, that's where we go back to, you know, dare I say, is it the financial implications of going to places like that want to pay money to take a bet, you know, to lure the World Rally Championship to them. You know, I'm guessing, has there even been a candidate event run? Do we know? You know, again, I'm speculating here.
From Japan.
Yeah, but there hasn't been. Yeah.
Candidate event even planned for Safari.
Yeah.
But there has been one for Shidi.
Right. Okay.
Then, of course, there was one for Turkey.
And we will never find out the ramifications of how that event went and where the holes were, or if there were any holes indeed, I guess. But, you know, again, it's such an interesting, you know, aside from all the other stuff that, of course, we talk about and, you know, which is always great when you and I talk, you know, I can put another hat on it. And, you know, I still believe that the calendar has such a fundamental knock-on effect for rallying, not just in WRC, but I believe in, you know, the lower rungs, because I think it will dictate where drivers end up. I really do.
Yeah.
Because the ones who bring budget And there are drivers that bring budget. Of course, they will have sponsors that will want to go to certain countries. And if that country's dropped, all of a sudden, it's not enticing for them to sponsor that driver anymore.
Right, so, yeah.
So, anyway, moving on to Rally GB, we're gonna have a couple of week break before then. Do you think that the title will be wrapped up on GB? Everything we said before, obviously, we like it to be wrapped up on GB. Obviously, we've got two events after Rally GB, but do you think that basically the three drivers are just going to go for it? And obviously, if they do go for it and one of them falls off or has a mechanical or whatever it may be, all of a sudden we're down to one, we could be down, you know, two drivers. Do you think it's just going to be the fastest driver now on the last three rounds?
Who knows? Really don't know. I mean, it's going to be an hour-by-hour type of decision to be made. But, no, I don't know. I mean, I don't really want the title to be settled at Rally GB on account of the fact that it will just diminish the interest in Spain and Australia.
Very true. Very true. Anyway, Martin, we've got to the end of an epic 35, nearly 40 minutes of talking rallying. So thank you as ever for your time.
Well, it's a pleasure. I hope not too many people fell asleep.
Martin Hoves, we will have you back, of course, in our next Absolute Rally season. It won't be next season. It'll be before next season starts. But folks, we'll be back after this break.
This is Absolute Rally, powered by the Kielder Works team. Cordless tools tailored for the world of motorsport. Developed from hands-on knowledge that you only get in the service park, not the boardroom. Kielder create products for their own use and like-minded people. Those inspired by mechanical motion and engineering. Plus, exclusively for Absolute Rally listeners, use discount code RALLY for 10% off at www.kielder.co. Simply search Kielder Tools online.
And welcome back to the final section of Absolute Rally. I think you'll agree, Section 2 and Section 3 will have facts, figures, fun, and genuinely none of the crap that all of us spoke at the top of the podcast. Which brings me to our final guest of the final episode of this particular season, Ian Campbell. Welcome back to Absolute Rally.
Thank you, Tony. So at the start of the crap, is this you coming the full circle now?
No. It's to be fair, we've Martin Holmes in the middle. We've got you at the end. You know, you've got clerk of the course for GB, championship manager for BRC. Of course, you're involved with Rally Day this weekend, and then you've got the reprobates at the top of the program that I have to kind of keep. It's like herding catsy, as I always use that analogy.
Yeah, can understand that one.
Yeah. So there you go. So. It's Rally Day this weekend, and unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to be there. But it's 60 years. Some do say 61 years, as you pointed out, April. We're going to call it 60 years of BRC and 60 years a celebration of a championship which is renowned across the world. Obviously, we've had winners from pretty much all over, but there's definitely something there for everybody from every generation, I guess, from the last 60 years.
Yeah, I mean, Rally Day, I'm looking forward to it. It's been a couple of times now. It's always a really good day. It's a brilliant day for the anoraks, because you know, I love going around and seeing all the cars that are there. And it's just one of these days where everybody within the sport is in this one location, and we're all wandering about, and it's great who you can catch up with. But from a Preston BRC perspective, we've got a large display area, and we've got some of the current generation rally cars on display. But we've also got some really good heritage cars in there as well. So Brian's taking along his Mitsubishi Lancer. Really looking forward to seeing Jim McRae's AC Delco Manta 400, which has just been completely rebuilt. There's the Simonite Escort, the RS2000 kit car. So I haven't seen that for a long, long time. So it'd be good to catch up with that one. And then we've got a Brooks, Andrews Heat for Hire Chevette, going to be on the stand. And probably the most iconic car that will be there will be Richard Burns' Subaru Legacy, the K44 LNX, which has just been completely rebuilt by David Williams and Tom Williams. And Tom's even going to be taking it out on the track itself. So it'll be great to hear that that boxer engine revving its way around the circuit.
Well, I hope Tom's going to wear clean overalls, bearing in mind what he went through last week. I was talking to David about 3 hours ago, getting his tails from Rally Turkey. But I seen a picture of the overalls that they had on from the weekend. And I hope Rally Day is going to be a lot cleaner, I think is where I was going with this. I hope Rally Day is going to be a lot cleaner. But no, I iconic cars, iconic sounds, as you say. And I just hope, and again, we'll talk about modern BRC and where we're going in the future shortly, but I just hope maybe in that 10, 20, 30 years time, we'll have an R2 car, we'll have an R5 car, you know, we'll have this platform where people will look back on our more recent eras, perhaps.
Well, absolutely. I mean, R5 cars, I think in total there's something like 700 of them have been sold around the world. These are going to be, you know, the cars that everybody looks back upon, you know, in that sort of time period you're talking about. But it, also at the weekend, it's going to give us a chance to actually sit down at, you know, with a couple of microphones and interview Russell Brooks and Jim McRae at one time, which is always going to be entertaining. When they were at the BRC Awards last year in November, the two of them were in great form, and they still haven't stopped digging each other every single time. You know, as to who's fastest, who's slowest, who's best at this and that and other things. So it's going to be good to catch up with that as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. So from putting that, it's a busy old time for you, isn't it? Because, right, let's get this straight. You're involved with, obviously, Prestone and the British Rally Championship and doing Rally Day. You're clerk of the course for Wales Rally GB, and the final round of the championship that you're manager of is also Wales Rally GB.
Final two rounds.
Yeah. At what point do you breathe?
Yeah, well, you know, it is busy. The desk is looking particularly untidy at the moment. But, you know, I'm not the only one. There's a big team back in the office in Collingbrook that are all really knocking in the hours just now, and all the volunteers that are around the countryside. Also, I think Dom Saunders from Rally Stage Team is doing the Marshall's post out just now, which is about 2,100 and something letters. So his dining room table is creaking. under the paperwork from there. So, yeah, it's a busy time. And then as soon as we get Rally GB out of the way, we've got an event in London on the 3rd of November for BRC. And then we've got BRC Awards on the 24th of November as well. So, and then we'll be into autosport. And then it'll be into the season. And it is what it is. It's the way it goes. And everybody would prefer to be busy than quiet. It does, yeah, okay, it's concentrated at this precise moment, but you know, the guys have started on the service park at Deeside at Rally Village, and they moved in there on Monday. I think WRC TV trucks arrive on Saturday or Sunday and start their setup. Hyundai won't be far away with the amount of time it takes for that construction to go up. So whilst we've got, you know, two weeks to go to the rally actually starts, in a lot of cases, it's started now.
Yeah, well, I know from obviously working with overseas teams in years gone by when we've had the Japanese there and things like that, normally we'd have a container probably sat in our yard for them waiting to go into the service park. And the service park team, they're always great people, always dead easy to work with as well, which makes life so much. Again, we've just done something with Martin Holmes. We've just been talking about calendars and things like that, which is a whole different, you know, it's like a rabbit hole in itself. But, you know, the behind the scenes stuff that people don't really understand and the fans don't understand, perhaps they don't really want to, perhaps they don't need to. And I understand that as well. But the other aspects of WRC or indeed rallying to some degree, you know, just how easy it is to get into a service park for a team if you're not a big team. You know, how good the guys are on the ground just to help you, you know, where's me bay? You know, where should I be? Where shouldn't I be? How much space have I got? You know, those guys on the ground, having dealt with them both as a competitor and also as a supplier to WRC as well, are some of the best.
Good. I will pass that on to them. They'll be delighted to hear it. And a lot of changes this year as well, because, you know, with the route that we do have for the weekend, the 4th to 7th October, My Heron is the only stage that is exactly the same as it was last year. So from a sporting perspective, it's going to be a very, very different event this year also. The crews are going to be busy with a lot of changes to notes. But 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, I went round for sort of my final sort of route check of the stages. And it's amazing how the character of the event has changed, I think, entirely from what it's been for the last 2013, I think was the first year we were in North Wales, you know, in that time period, because we're now a day and a half in North Wales, and the North Wales stages are completely different from my Herons and Garthiniogs and Davies and Halfrins, in that they're a lot narrower, they're tight, they've got a lot more junctions in them, so there's a lot more changes or immediate changes of directions. They're very, very technical, and they're making up a large chunk of the rally this year. Having said that, I mean, Mid Wales on Saturday, when we're down in Halfrin and Sweet Lam and these guys, we're using all the stages on Saturday that we've generally taken 2 days to use every other year. So Saturday is a big, big day. And maybe when I did my recce, I did it wrong and I started in my head, and it's just like such a fantastic stage. It's brilliant from that one. So I think it'll be interesting to hear what competitors are saying come the end of recce on Wednesday night, as to how they feel the character of the rally is, because I certainly feel it's changed completely.
Yeah, we were going to talk. You led me quite conveniently there directly into. I was going to ask you about routes and everything else. With regards to the big story behind the route change, which is the big obvious story aside from all the things you've just been describing there, is because of what's going to happen with Llandudno. And you know, from our overseas listeners, obviously, you guys work incredibly hard, and I know Conwy Council did as well with regards to getting that stage, you know, coming down off the Orme into the streets of Llandudno. It isn't going to be the power stage now, but it still will be an incredible spectacle, and you can just imagine the helicopter shots.
They'll be fantastic, and the amount of work that's been done on the Great Orme Llandudno stage is completely disproportionate to the competitive distance that it represents on the event. But these showpiece stages always do. It doesn't matter, you know, where it is you're going, the showpiece stages always take the serious amount of time. And this is, for the UK, it's a big, big thing, because it's the first time that we have taken a World Championship event onto the public streets in the UK. It's never happened before. So there's a lot of unknowns. There's a lot of work going into it. They're also... The roads are only closed at 4 o'clock on Saturday afternoon for the first car starting the stage at 16 minutes past nine the following morning. So we've got a short period of time to build everything and erect it. And it's not only building it and erecting it, it's making sure it looks nice as well, so that these helicopter shots do look fantastic, because it is a big, big advert for Llandudno, for Conwy Council and for Wales. So it's a lot that's gone into that. But then I was watching something on WRC Plus the other day, and I'm now trying to rack my brains to remember what event it was. And it's not unusual for the crews on a WRC event to come off a gravel stage, go onto some asphalt, there's a link section, and go back into a gravel section. But that's just completely alien for us. And this is the first year that we're able to do it. And it's going to be fascinating just to see how the whole thing works, how it comes together, how in Macno North and South, which are... You don't even think they're the same forest, because they've got two totally different characters. But the bit of tarmac in the middle that joins them makes them one lovely stage now that we haven't had the opportunity to do before. So it's all new to us. And as you say, Tony, other people from other parts of the world will be giving it. Don't know what you're getting excited about, guys. We do this every week. But yeah, it's the start of a new dawn for our sport over here.
Now, we've just had a really, really exciting turkey, which we've speculated about and talked about to death and went round in circles, because that's what we do. We never definitively get to an end. We're hoping that GB doesn't give us our WRC title decider, but indeed what we are guaranteed of is a new British Rally Champion.
Yes, we are indeed. So we've got four drivers in WRC that can win the title over. All mathematically, although Matt Edwards is very much in the driving seat, to use a horrible pun, from there. We've got three drivers in the juniors that can still win the title from there, and the three cadets that are winning, entered in the event, they can all come away as a champion at the end of the year as well. So it is still wide open from that perspective, and it's going to be interesting, because a lot of pressure on Matt to get a finish on Thursday, Friday. in the North Wales stages, so that he can, if you like, relax on Saturday, Sunday, because if he gets sufficient points, that he would be playing champion on that first leg. But North Wales is actually the only place this year where Matt's actually had an accident and a non-finish. So, don't know, does that bode well for Bogey and Yates coming behind him? I don't know. So it's going to be something to watch. And the juniors are always, always entertaining to watch. Steve Rockland and Pirelli just, you know, marched away with it. He was in a different class, but the battle for second and third was down to tenths of a second. In Ulster, at one point, there was 0.3 seconds between first and second in the junior going into the last two stages. So, you know, that one is wide open. And for the cadets, Jordan Reynolds has probably had the best results so far this year. Finlay Retson has set the fastest stage times this year, but has only actually finished one event. But he won that one by about 3 minutes. So I don't know what's going to happen with these guys. And remember that, you know, they're all generally only in their second year of rallying, and they're going straight into a WRC event. So it's all going to be very, very different for them.
Very much so. Very much so. Talking BRC, we recently had the new calendar announced. It was a calendar which we as a podcast, and I use the collective term as we all applauded it. We all felt that this year's calendar was perhaps a stretch for your average person with regards to time off and financially and everything else. And we applauded the new calendar. Was it one that was easy to put together? Was it competitive feedback from this year? What brought about the changes?
The calendar was not easy to put together. It was a lot of work, a lot of discussions, a lot of negotiations, and a lot of it sat as a work of fiction for many a time, right up to probably about 4 days before it was announced. There is a lot that's gone into that. The best thing that I'm coming out of everything with BRC is a full HND degrees honour in hindsight. This year we went with the calendar because what we were asked for 2018 was the big events was what people enjoyed. So we went with that. Maybe the events have gone too big. It's one of these things that for next year it's interesting that a lot of events are going to a one-day format. Because that is the one that, you know, takes away the least time away from work and from home life, as long as the competitive mileage that's in there is, reflects the standard that they're looking for and the quality that they're looking for. And it's interesting when you look at other national championships that's the format that they're following as well. There are a lot of national events, not a lot of national championships now, like the Finnish championship, are sort of one-day events. And that seems to be the way that it's going. So very excited with the 2019 calendar. The reaction has been overwhelmingly positive from the most important people, the competitors. We've got a lot of work to do still on getting on what we want to see tweaks to the promotion package for next year. Promotion this year has grown hugely over the 16 and 17 figures that we record and we share with the teams and the registered competitors. So that's always on an upward trend, but it's to keep going with that. And that's a bit that, if you like, that we as the promoters can influence. The events are where we go to and we work with the organisers, but it's, you know, they're there for the competition element. And to start off, you know, with Cambrian, which is, you know, is a well-known event. It's one that a lot of the BRC guys go to as a shakedown and test. West Cork is going to be great because it puts us as a head-to-head straight away with the Irish Tarmac Championship competitors, which always makes a good rally. And we always want to see who's got the bragging rights on that one. And I'm claiming that we've never been beaten yet as BRC, so that will hopefully keep that one going. Pirelli format worked really well for the competitors this year. I didn't like it, but the competitors really liked it. Ypres is what Ypres is. Ypres is absolutely fantastic and is everything but a World Rally Championship round in title. Ulster, they're going through, they are analysing a lot of things that they may look to change for next year with their format. But again, it's another round against the Irish guys, but it's also so it's such a tough event. I mean, whether they go to a one day or whether they stay in the format that they've got, the Ulster is, just seems to always be very condensed and very, very dramatic because the stages are so hard and the weather conditions come against them and things like that from there. And then we finish back off and, at the Galloway Hills, which, you know, as a, from a, an organisational point of view, is absolutely fantastic. It's a top-notch event. And also they've got access to a huge forest plantation in that part of southern Scotland, that they've got a lot of stages on offer. So, you know, the proof will be in the pudding. I'll be able to come back and hopefully speak to you at this time next year and tell you what it was like. Because until then, who knows?
Hey, absolutely, who knows? Was there a conscious mindset of putting two Irish events in to perhaps try and entice Irish crews back into the BRC?
Yes, it's a short answer to that, but also the point to get across is that it is not being put there as an attempt to poach Irish Tarmac Championship competitor. Ourselves and the Irish Tarmac guys are in conversation a lot, actually, about how we can help each other as not only as championships but as competitors. Are there things that we can learn? Are there things that we can use collectively as a voice to put things together? So we work at it from that point of view. If we get some extra registrations out of it, absolutely fantastic. But we will get extra competition out of it. We know that. And that's always going to be a good thing.
Last one on this, before I let you go. I've got to ask this one. We've debated R5 so much recently. And, you know, we take on board everything you've just said before about the statistics of how many have been sold and things like that. But we're now also becoming, I think most people are now massively aware of how expensive they are to run. But we're also very aware of there's nothing in between almost of R2 and R5. You know, R3 is effectively dead. Do you think the R5 formula is almost to some degree an unraveling of what started off as a strong R5 category in 2016 for you to where we are today? Is that they've just become so expensive, but there's nothing else underneath that you can go to?
Finish on an easy question. So R5, you know, R5 is worldwide a hugely successful formula. You can't disagree with that at all. Yes, it is expensive to run, but then you get guys that are running Fiesta WRC cars on, you know, like for the UK, BTRDA 45-mile, you know, clubman events and Scottish Rally Championship events, Welsh Championship events, and such like. They're not cheap to run either. So what is it that, so, you know, I don't know where the answer is. I think the easiest one is that we're providing a platform that offers competitors a chance to have reconnaissance, offers the competitors a chance to do perhaps longer distances in different venues throughout a season. And that's all that we can provide. The R5 cars are the most spectacular cars that are out there that we have for national championships. And I think that it's absolutely right that they are there. Unfortunately, there's always going to be a cost element to our sport. And I think that that's not something that we can look to influence. And from what I can do, that's got to come from the world governing body, which is something that I know that they are looking at. And they're looking at different variations of either reducing cost or actually creating different classes. And that's something that's going to come, you know, over the next couple of years. But I don't think we can... I think we're right to start to look into the crystal ball and start to see, you know, what do we have to come up with in the next few years for the sport. Where does it go? How does it look? Where does electrification fit into it? And things like that. But we can't turn around and all of a sudden say that a formula that has sold 700 vehicles worldwide is doing bad things for rallying.
I don't think it is, but I think for us, we've seen the numbers drop, haven't we? You know, there's no shadow of a doubt about it. We've seen numbers drop, and you know, we can use the crossover of BTRDA of people running, you know, or renting a WRC car you know, spending 15 grand or whatever to rent a, you know, a Fiesta or a Focus. But, you know, they're guys of a, with all due respect, of probably mine and your age that just want to go out and have a blast. I guess the pressure is for that young driver, you know, is unless they've got, you know, a family company or family wealth or whatever, to go out and find the sponsorship to actually run an R5 car in our national series, as opposed to going to an ERC or even a WRC2, you know, is the bridge or is the jump that actual big, and is it more enticing for a sponsor to look at slightly bigger stage? And is that the kind of way you know, it's a rock and a hard place, really, isn't it?
Absolutely. We started in 2016 with, or I started in 2016 with the British Rally Championship, and you know, like myself and Ben Taylor, you know, went out and banged the drum on what the BRC was going to be, and we got a great response, you know, from there, all on a hope, a prayer, and a promise, and that was, you know, and that was what was behind it, but you know, we've got to look at, you know. Is there a, if you like, some question, is there a place for British Rally Championship? You can look at it in two different ways. If it wasn't for the British Rally Championship, could we really look at the growth that we've had for Rhys Yates, as an example, over the last 3 years? I think he's been in the sport now for 4.5 years, and is now, you know, up and doing competitively very well in the European Rally Championship, as well as on the British Rally Championship. Would we, you know, would we have been given the opportunity, like, to Robert Duggan and to Callum Devine? Would we have discovered, you know, the pace that James Williams has got, and such like, without the opportunity for going out and doing reconnaissance and things like that? Is that the things that the British Rally Championship, you know, is bringing? Or conversely, you look at it and you go, well, actually, Chris Ingram's doing not too bad at the moment. He's done very, very well. Podium there at the weekend in Turkey. And in essence, he hasn't really touched British Rally Championship at all. So, yeah, big questions that, you know, I keep looking at. Don't have the answer for you yet, Tony. And
I don't think any of us do. It wasn't as much of a question. It was more of a debate. It's very, very easy to be hard and knock. And, you know, I can be, but I'll always openly admit I don't have the answer either. What I do know, without a shadow of a doubt, is that I think, without realising it, and again, we're massively parochial at this point. I apologise to our overseas listeners, but I think the UK and Ireland at the moment, we have got possibly the best group of young drivers we've had for a long, long time. And I'm afraid that people are not quite realising it yet, and we might miss that opportunity. And that's a whole different thing as well.
The juniors that we have in the British Rally Championship are phenomenal. The pace that they are on is incredible. And when you see that, when they have gone to JWRC, they are, excuse me, on the pace, you know, straight away. We know that they can go up there and not be floundering at the back. And I think that's a huge, you know, tick in the box for the events that we can offer in the United Kingdom. And that you look at the British Rally Championship and you get somebody like Oscar Solberg who turns around and goes, I can do BRC and I can drive on absolutely every type of terrain that I will find in the World Rally Championship. So for him, it's a great training ground, somewhere to do his apprenticeship, because he can get fast stages, tight stages, rough stages, bumpy stages, slightly tarmac, fast tarmac, the whole lot. And we all know that you can see all the four weathers and there are four seasons in one day anyway. So you get to do it all quite quickly.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But again, you know, it's one of those things where I don't have the answers either. I just fear sometimes when I look at the costs, and I know the costs to run an R5 car, and you know, I just don't want it to be, perhaps from a selfish point of view, I don't want it to be the be all and end all. I want to see a busy successful BRC. That's what I want, because you know, it's been so special, I think, to us all over the years, and we still look back at the iconic images and everything else. But we also understand the world has changed. You know, we can, the rosy coloured spectacles of looking back at F2 and Super 1600s and, you know, everything else. You know, maybe that's something for a debate in the future. I don't know.
Sorry, Tony, I'm not taking on time here for you, but you know, if we're going to look at it from there, 2016, we had Elfyn Evans, who came in and pretty much had a clean sweep, but he did not have it his own way. he was pushed hard. 2017, it went to 1 point, the last stage, and 1/10 of a second. You can't get any more competitive than that. And this year, whilst it's very easy to knock because we got hidden by the beast from the east with the border counties in March, goodness knows what beast hit us in September from the Oman, and that's one that we won't go into. But if we look at it from an entry perspective, we were four down this year on the Prelie compared to 2017. We were two down in Ypres compared to 2017, and we were one down in Ulster compared to 2017. And for Rally GB coming up, I think we are, if we compare it with Rally El Aman last year for the final two rounds, I think we're two entries down. So if we're going to look at it purely from a numbers point of view, we're not far away from where we have been. I'm not saying that we don't need to be better. Everybody always needs to be better, and we always need to keep working on our different programmes with the events, the promotion, the TV, with the number of competitors we get, with the incentives and all these sort of things. But I think that just to finish off on that one, it's, you know, 2018 has maybe not gone to the plan that I had for it, but it's not been just as bad as it's easy to knock it.
No. And, you know, again, you know, Matt is somebody who I know and I work with. I've had this conversation with Matt, who, you know, who, in all intents and purposes, if he behaves himself on day one and two, will be crowned British Rally Champion. You know, the sharp end has been the sharp end. There is no shadow of a doubt about it. I think what we quite haven't had is that depth that we perhaps had in 16. You know, that's fact. But equally, the fact that it's still been as competitive. So, you know, I guess we're back. We come full circle of what is its job? What is the championship's job at the end of the day? What are we trying to achieve from it? And, you know, the facts are there, as you say, for the younger drivers that I've learned, you know, from Recce and things like that, which, you know, that's what the BRC should be doing for our young drivers as well. I guess the fine balance is to entice back the RLRSers like me and some of the other ones that perhaps can maybe afford to do it to a point, but definitely not an R5 car, I hasten to add, by the way, but could afford to do it. But what's going to get us back, you know, what's going to get the older driver back, that, you know, back in the day, you know, if again it's the halcyon days, which we all bang on about, and, you know, I'm guilty of it as well, you know, the classes that propped up the classes that added a bit of depth to the championship. I think that's the challenge as well.
You know, absolutely, and a one-make championship would be the way to do it, and we haven't got that at the moment, and we know that there's companies working on trying to get it, and we just need to, you know, support them and go with them as well. Yeah. But, you know, the sport's always been, you know, in these sort of places, and I don't think we're in a bad place at all just now. I think we've got really good competition. It's one of these ones that we can talk everything down, but we can also look at what's good and coming out of it. And we're going to have, you know, a good 4 days in North Wales with three new champions or four new champions coming out of it, you know, from there. And then, as we just touched upon a while ago, we go and we celebrate that one night out in Manchester on the 24th of November. And then we're straight into Autosport and we start again for 2019. And that's where we've got to get everybody to come back.
And that's why it's a perfect place to end this podcast for this season and this episode. So, folks, thank you, Ian Campbell, for coming on. It's always a pleasure to talk rallying, whatever level it's at. I always enjoy our conversations. It's always good fun. And thank you so much for your time.
Not at all. Thank you, Tony. And we'll catch up with you soon.
You absolutely will. And folks, that has been our final episode for this particular season. Thank you so much all for getting involved and supporting us and sharing things around. We hope you enjoyed the competition with the guys at Kielder and we the Terriers, and we are have a meeting at quite aptly at Wales Rally GB Service Park with all the people that are involved, Kielder and Dan and we the Terriers, about what we're going to do next season for the competition and what we're going to design and everything else. And keep spreading the love, keep spreading the word, and we will be back same time, same place, in your little podcast hole in about 3 weeks.
Absolute Rally, powered by the Kielder Works team. Spread the word and download the podcast every week.